Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Seeking Sustainability. Oh my gosh. So obviously, the last couple of days have been absolute nail biters and absolutely stressful, anxiety ridden chaos. Just wild with the election, with everything happening. So I hope everyone is feeling as sane as possible amidst this election or the chaos that is this election. And obviously they haven't announced who the president is yet. So who won the election, we don't know. And Georgia, they might not call for potentially a couple of weeks. But on the bright side, let's stay hopeful, because it does look like Biden is projected to win. So let's all just keep our fingers crossed and take care of ourselves and do whatever you need to do to keep the anxiety at bay, and stay hopeful and stay positive. So yeah, but I know it's insanely stressful. I've been super stressed out for the last couple of days. It's been crazy. But aside from that, this episode, I had the opportunity to talk to Samantha Hartzok, who is the director of education at Remake. And Remake is an organization that I've followed on Instagram for forever, and they are phenomenal. So they're based out of San Francisco, and Remake is a community of millennial and Gen Z women who pledge to wear their values and put an end to fast fashion. So they have, and they do this through a variety of ways, all of which, of course, we go in depth talking about in the episode, or Sam talks a lot about. So they do this through one of their primary efforts as an ambassador program, which you can sign up for on their website, and that is remake.world. It's amazing. So if you're interested in fashion, definitely check that out. But they train young people from around the globe to become leaders in the fashion industry. And those people that they train hope will work to mobilize others in the fight against fast fashion, which is incredible. And they do this training through educational webinars, workshops, panels, and more. And if you do register for this program, you can attend all of these webinars. And I think Sam said they have monthly meetings. So it's definitely an incredible community to be a part of, if that's something you're interested in. They also work to educate and empower people, and that they do that through creating documentary films, fact-filled stories, campaign assets, and workshop materials. And their social media is super educational too, so definitely follow them on Instagram. Again, as always, all of that will be linked in the show notes if you're interested in checking any of those resources out. And then they also work to drive transparency and accountability in the fashion industry. And Sam talks about that more, and it's super, super interesting to hear about. So Remake, they have a Remake seal of approval process. If for those of you who don't know, and again, we talk about this later, there's just not a lot of accountability in the garment industry. There's really not a lot of standards that companies have to, you know, hold themselves to. And there's a lot of greenwashing that happens in the industry. So their seal of approval process pushes brands to publish more information about their supply chain and sustainability efforts to the public. So that way they stop greenwashing and just, you know, publishing marketing assets that say they're sustainable when, what does that even mean? And that way they start being honest with their customers by publishing this information and making it public, which not a lot of companies do. That's like really rare. And they also, before I forget, they also launched, in light of COVID, so a few months ago, they launched the Pay Up Fashion Movement or petition, which is incredible. And you can check it out on their website. So yeah, in this episode, talking to Sam was so interesting. And so we talk about her journey through navigating her career and the path that led her to ending up at Remake, going from working at change.org in DC to moving out to San Francisco and ending up at Remake. And then an in-depth look too at what Remake does and the importance of their work, because what they do is so important. And I think fast fashion is so much more prevalent than people realize. It's not just like 3 to 5 major brands that we hear about, like Zara and H&M and Forever 21. It's really like most clothing that is produced nowadays. So yeah, Remake's work is just incredible. And then the issues, we also talk about, of course, the issues within the fashion industry and how they need to be improved, and then what Remake is doing to mobilize their community to end fast fashion. And so whether you are someone like me who, you know, kind of knows about this stuff and is really interested in it, or you never knew about any of this, or maybe you've heard that fashion is not fantastic, but you don't really know that much about the issues within the industry, this is such a fantastic episode that I think will really, really open your eyes to the issues within the industry. And a great example of an organization who does phenomenal and inspiring work that is aimed at ending fast fashion. So I hope this is inspiring to you and sparks your interest, and definitely support Remake, donate to them, sign their petitions, watch their documentaries, follow them on Instagram. And yeah, well, without further ado, I hope you enjoy the episode, and let's welcome Sam to Seeking Sustainability. But yeah, thank you so much for agreeing to join me. I was really excited when I heard back from you guys. So yeah.
Definitely. Really happy to be here. I was listening to your intro episode this morning, and I feel like you're just like such our key audience at Remake. Of who we want to be engaged with is a lot of people working in fashion merchandising and marketing, and students who are kind of realizing the more they learn about the fashion industry, you know, the more impacts they see happening and want to be engaged. So
yeah.
Oh, kudos, that's to exciting. You. I'm watching this podcast. You're awesome.
Thank you. Oh, well, I'm like in an in-between where I'm like, I graduated from college, and then I've been like applying for jobs like crazy. Oh my gosh. And so I figured in the meantime, I might as well like have this side hustle going and just for fun, but also like, it's a good way to talk to people and meet people and, you know, share the messages of all sorts of individuals and organizations. So
yeah. Yeah. When you were talking about that specifically in your intro episode, and you said, you know, graduating as like the class of COVID, it completely brought me back to when I graduated, which was in, gosh, in 2009, into the financial crisis. And you were talking about too, your internship in New York, which totally opened your eyes to like how nuts this industry is and how there's not a lot of worker rights, labor rights, protections, and unpaid internships. My summer before my senior year, I had done an internship at JCPenney's, and that completely like is what changed a big moment of what changed the trajectory of my career, because every day I came there being more overwhelmed, kind of that like, didn't have a term for it at the time, but like was definitely having eco anxiety of realizing, all right, I work on the mass merchandising action team and cookware and cutlery, because I didn't come from a cool enough school to be put in the women's merchandising department, though kudos to the University of Missouri and their textile and apparel management division, which is where I came from. And then I was like, all right, JCPenney's is designing their own lives of knives and pots and pans and all your kitchen gadgets. Then they also sell a gazillion other lines. And then you have a Target and a Ross and a Kohl's, right? And all these other mass merchandisers doing the same thing. And I was just like, whoa, there is just a ton of stuff in this world, and I don't want to be a part of pushing that out. So that's definitely
like, oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Yeah. So that was just, no worries. So that was just kind of like what changed my mind. And I came back to school and launched a fair trade store there.
Oh, that's really cool. Good for you. That's crazy that it was like being part of interning for like a corporate company that opened your eyes. And I also think it's really cool that you were working in kitchenware and cutlery, because I think people, and I tell this to people, like, and I talked about this actually on my last episode that I just posted, which is about regenerative agriculture, how like we talk about fashion and like people are starting to understand that apparel has a supply chain and like a story and an impact, but like so does everything you own,
even if
it is your cutlery and that stuff that people don't think about.
It's like everything we buy.
Yeah, everything we touch, everything we buy. But yeah, so we'll also go back and get into your background more too. But before anything, my opening question I typically ask is, in your opinion, what does it mean to be an environmentalist?
Yeah, I love that you start all your conversations with this question, particularly I think the explicit awakening there's happening in the environmental space. So for me, it really is all about the interlinkings in the world around you, right? It means you're willing to take a deeper look into how environmental issues are compounded by other factors, such as someone's social identity, like race and class and gender, sexuality, and structural inequities. You know, and it's about really acknowledging that climate justice is a social justice issue and that we're all a part of this like great big ecosystem. Because I think about, you know, we've seen this happen in real life time and time again, from the Dakota Access Pipeline to Flint's water crisis to Hurricane Katrina. You know, social justice and climate justice are one and the same. And then for us, particularly at Remake, where, you know, I was thinking about this question and where it really comes to life for me is, you know, the women who are making our clothes are regularly exposed to these common chemicals, like those in the glues of our shoes, the chemicals used to clean our garments, the chemicals used to dye them. You know, this exposure often leads to chronic illnesses and reproductive health issues, from menstrual problems to miscarriages and birth defects. And really that chemical exposure just doesn't stay in the factories either, right? So for decades, we've known companies have chosen to use natural resources, particularly our rivers. I think you mentioned River Blue in one of your earlier episodes as a dumping ground for hazardous chemicals, right? So the people living near textile manufacturing facilities face water pollution as a daily reality. So, you know, health and environment are inextricably linked. You know, you have your quality of food, you have your quality of air, your access to clean water and fresh water. They all impact your health and they're all a part of the environment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's so interesting to hear you like reiterating this stuff, because those are the exact thoughts that like, once I came to term with those and like realized that all of this stuff was happening and that the apparel industry is so much larger and more complex than I ever thought. And that industries in general are just as such. That's when it really like opened my eyes too. So yeah, I think, yeah, people definitely just aren't aware, I guess. I don't know. I think they're starting to be, but then like I was saying to someone that you have to, or maybe I said this in my first episode, that you have to like see that's like realize that those things that are really hard to look at and come to terms with. And yeah, that's so interesting what you said about women too and being exposed to the chemicals. It's so all interconnected. So yeah, that's so true.
Yeah. And then the other half a part of that, which I think you're doing a great job of, right? It's like you have this awareness, you're deepening your understanding, you're kind of like taking this systems thinking mindset, you're seeing everything in action and kind of that interconnectivity. But I think what really makes an environmentalist is, you know, you're willing to take action. It's a lot like allyship. I feel like this summer, particularly with Black Lives Matter, people are talking a lot about allyship, right? Well, you're not an ally unless you take action. You're not an environmentalist unless you're actively refusing, you know, to remain silent and to advocate for the protection of both people and the planet. And so, you know, we can start protesting, petitioning our officials, demanding climate justice really from anyone who listens. So I think the action part is really important piece to drive home next.
Yeah, absolutely. And can you talk about, I mean, you touched a little bit upon your background, but your backstory and your background and how you got to working at Remake. And you mentioned you studied at University of Missouri, and I saw in your bio, you got a BA in textiles manufacturing. Is that what it was?
Yeah, textile and apparel manufacturing. Yeah.
But yeah, just if you could just talk about your background and
Yeah, so currently I am the director of education at Remake, and Remake focuses on the education and leadership development of young women and men who are interested in fashion. Really, you know, we hold brands accountable, we're raising awareness, we're really doing our best to make fashion a force for good. And my role in particular is I run our Remake Ambassador program, which means we have 500 very young students, young professionals, people like yourself who are interested in fashion, and we're really training them up to be those future change makers. Because our kind of long-term theory of change is that, you know, when you have people in every community demanding for climate justice, demanding for social justice with a, you know, a lens towards fashion, we're going to start seeing change. That's a bit of like what we're trying to do. And I do a lot of our work with going into universities and teaching students there as well. And then alongside Remake, I am the one of the co-founders at QB Consulting. We're a women-owned and led ESG consultancy. So we work with Fortune 500 companies, private equity firms, and nonprofits to really reduce their environmental impact and ensure they're creating like programs and practices and policies that really put people first. So it's kind of like what I'm doing today, but how I got there was just like a twisty-turvy kind of process. I've been having a lot of conversations about my career lately. I think particularly as, you know, like you, a whole group of young students and young professionals graduated into such an unknown space. And people are also more and more excited to get into sustainability. And I think for me, it's really about following your understanding your values and then following like your passion. So as I was mentioning earlier, I started out as a journalism major. And because I saw that, I basically, it was like being a lawyer or being a journalist are the only ways I can have an impact in the world is what I understood as like young Sam, who graduated in like 05 from high school.
And I was like,
great, I'll go be a journalist. And then I remember so starkly in one of our first classes, and this is also, I feel like when blogging was just becoming a thing and like newspapers were dying, and I was like, oh my God, what is this field? And one of the first classes I went to, a professor came in and was like, you don't need a journalism degree to do journalism. And I was like, okay, great, done. And I immediately changed my major and went into international studies, and then luckily found textile and apparel management because I was always interested in fashion and really wanted to be a fashion designer, but slowly came to the terms that I have no creative skills in my skill set, but wanted to be a part of that process. And so I studied textile apparel management, kind of got put on that retailing merchandising track, learned more and more about the business, went to work at JCPenney's, as I was mentioning earlier, that totally changed my perspective on the fashion industry. And I didn't want to be a part of like bringing more stuff into this world. It was also interesting. Several of my intern mates got job offers for when they graduated, but you know, we were graduating into 08 and 09, which was at the time one of the biggest crises that we had been into. So many of them lost their jobs. They shut down their internship program. Yeah. And lucky for me, I wasn't going there yet, didn't know exactly what I was going to do. So kind of went back home, moved in with grandma, spent probably like 3 months, you know, living at her house, pulling as much wisdom I could in our early morning coffee chats with my grandpa and grandma, and eventually got an internship at Tom's. And so I moved out to LA, because basically what I had decided is I wanted to work at, you know, the intersection of business and good. And at the time, that was either going to be managing a store called Pluto's Closet in Plano, Texas, or interning at Tom's. And so luckily I took the internship at Tom's, was on their retail marketing team, which was, you know, just amazing. It really gave me that kind of like bite of working for a startup, working for a social enterprise back in 09, like that was the new thing. And then pretty much from there was no turning back. The job market was still you know, very uncertain, and working in sustainability was really not an option or a word that people used, but I did my best. And so after that, I went to Austin and took a job, or like a part-time contract, working with a fair trade collective there. It was kind of like a brother-sister duo. He was in Austin, the sister was in India, working directly with the artisans there. Oh, wow. And then I needed a pay bump because they were definitely not paying me living wages. And so, again, which is like the hard part, I think, especially early working in your fashion, no matter where you are. So then I went out to the Dallas Museum of Art and opened up their online gift store. And though it was a little farther from where I wanted to be in terms of impact, it still kind of was like a function of business fueling something that was like doing good in society. So bringing access to art. And so I did that for a while, helped design some of our, you know, like the little pop-up shops at the end of galleries, merchandise, applied my merchandising skills to those, got to do some buying for that, which was awesome. It was probably like the role that I flexed the most of what I learned in my degree in. And then after that, you know, still not really making enough to live on my own at the time. So I moved back in with my parents, and then decided to move to DC because I also knew I never wanted to be in Texas. And so I was like, wait, how did I get back here? I need to leave. And so I decided just to, you know, take a risk and move out to DC. It was like 2012. There was great energy there. A lot of young people, a lot of good jobs, a lot of people who are ready to change the world. And I was like, all right, I want to be a part of that. And I luckily ended up getting a job with change.org, which was pretty pivotal for me in my career. It was, and it kind of, and this is what I tell a lot of people who are thinking about going into sustainability, is for me, it was like way far from, you know, what I had been working in, which was like textiles and products. But I had also decided like, okay, that job field is limited. There's not a lot of options there. Okay, how do I still be, what are my values? What do I actually want to be doing if we go another level higher up? And what I really enjoyed is I wanted to work for a social enterprise. I wanted to be a part of the team that was financially fueling the business that was doing good. What could that look like? And it turns out change.org was something that could look like. And that was the best move because it also took me, someone who had been calling herself a, you know, what is it, fiscally conservative and socially liberal person for her whole life because she grew up in Texas. And
I was the same way. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. My parents at the time never talked about politics. Mm-hmm. I grew up very in a very heavy, like evangelical Christian household. Gosh. And, you know, yeah, I told you, I think you saw my Instagram. I was like, we're going to be kindred spirits.
I love when people use the word kindred spirits. So I was like, the fact that she even said kindred spirits means that we're kindred spirits. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so going to DC was amazing. And I was completely and I also from Texas too, I didn't really believe in the power of politics because nothing ever changed there. Everyone thought the same. Nonprofits were only like, you know, food banks and clothing drives. And then I get to DC and see how powerful our politics are, how powerful nonprofits are. I'm immediately working with like people who worked on the 2008 Obama campaign, who have been like living and breathing advocacy and organizing and labor rights their whole lives. And I just soaked everything up. Now my role, you know, wasn't doing any of that directly, but I joined every opportunity I could. I talked to all the campaigners there. You know, they are still some of my closest friends today who I have really like learned so much and have been pivotal on my journey, you know, being comfortable with putting myself out there, with organizing, with doing activism, with talking about the inequities that are in this world. So I ended up staying there for 5 years because finally was making a good paycheck, which is what I'd been after, and was finally surrounded by amazing people and, you know, just a part of a company that was like really shaking things up. I eventually hit a wall, you know. I was like, all right, I've learned enough here. And now that I'm looking for new jobs, I realize, oh, I don't actually want to be doing kind of like online advertising type of stuff or online digital media sales. That's not what I got here to do. I was like, okay, so I want to kind of go back to, you know, impacting companies, go back to working in the fashion industry. Sustainability is an actual word now in a conversation. And so it's like 2016. So I applied to business school and got into the Presidio Graduate School. So moved out to California, and that's where I am today. Got my MBA, and actually right before I moved to SF, earlier that year, Aisha, who's the founder of Remake, came and spoke at MCON. And she was like, I think Remake had been around for maybe a year by then. And she was talking about why she started Remake, you know, her career and what she wanted to set out to do. And I was like, who is that lady who is speaking to my soul? Like, that is exactly what I've always wanted to be a part of. So when I got out to San Francisco, I tracked her down, figured out how to have cocktails with her, and we've been building our relationship ever since. So then when I had the opportunity during my MBA program in a strategy class, me and another classmate talked to her and asked if we could bring Remake in to be kind of our strategy project and work closely with Aisha to help her achieve the goals she wanted to. And it really was that experience that laid the groundwork for our ambassador program, which is something that I lead today. And Aisha was like, all right, you put the paper forth, now like let's build it and let's do it. So I've been working with her to do that over the past couple of years. And then it was at the same time that I was learning that, you know, I loved working on projects, working with different companies, really wanted to flex more of my business development background too, and saw a couple different holes in the sustainability consulting space and an opportunity to launch a new type of ESG consultancy. So at the same time I was like working with Remake is when me and a former Change.org colleague, Noemi, launched QB Consulting, which is where we kind of work to bring together the spaces of diversity, equity, inclusion, and sustainability.
Wow.
So that's my long journey. I don't know if you wanted the full story, but I gave it to you.
I'm going to cry. You're me, like, however many years from now.
Oh, I know.
Weird. Okay, I don't know. Like, I mean, of course, we'll get into, I mean, like, what Remake does, which you touched upon, but, like, I'm just too excited, and I have to really express this. That is so, your, like, story is so, like, okay, first of all, awesome and amazing. And it's so weird how much it lines up with, like, not that it's about me, but like where I'm at. Like, yeah. But so, you know, what's so funny is I was looking, I literally the same thought process. So my mom was just talking to me this morning and she was like, well, are you applying to, like, you know, like, cause I wasn't just applying to like jobs in the apparel industry, and it was the same thing. And I was like, you know what, okay, how can I, if I'm applying to digital marketing or social media coordinator positions, how can I, and I need that experience under my belt, how can I like kind of pivot and gain that experience while still doing something good? And I live like 45 minutes from DC, but I like never go, like I would be a tourist there. And so I started looking at DC, which I never wanted to live there. And I applied to nonprofits.
Yep.
That's so crazy. Oh, wow. Yeah. And change.org was on my list, but I don't think they had any openings, but I applied to a bunch and it was, wow, that's wild. What was it like moving from DC to California? Is it very different?
Yeah. California is never any place I wanted to live.
Really? Okay. Interesting.
I fell in love with DC. I went out there because the Presidio Graduate School is an amazing graduate program and an MBA program. And I had been I'd kind of been playing with the idea of going to graduate school for 3 years. I always kind of knew it was probably going to be in my career path. I'm definitely like a lifelong learner.
Yeah.
And after evaluating a couple state schools, a couple big schools on the East Coast, you know, I realized I was never going to go into management consulting. I was never going to work for any traditional type of role. So I was like, all right, I don't want a traditional MBA for sure. I know exactly what I want to do. I know exactly what I want all my learning to be about. And Presidio provided that opportunity. And it was a nice transition because Change.org's headquarters is in SF. And so I spent like the first semester working there and then transition to be a full-time student. But that was pretty easy of a transition to me. I also thought we would not be here very long. My husband, on the other hand, who at the time I met in DC, we just got married last year, but he had never left his home, really. He's a Maryland boy
who, okay,
went, to
yeah.
who went to Virginia Tech, who got a job in Baltimore, then worked in, you know, in DC. And so for him, it was a really big, big move in his first big move away. But he freaking loves it. And now has like his dream job. And he is like, so you made me come here, so we're staying forever, right? And I was like, I guess.
That's so funny. I toured Virginia Tech, actually. They have, I don't know what came over me. Like, I went, when I went there, it was so pretty, but I was like, oh my gosh, there's cows. Like, this is not a fashion hub at all.
No.
But yeah, that's, wow, that's so funny. Oh, we are kindred spirits, my heart. So can you talk about what, just a brief overview of what Remake is and your mission? And then you've also mentioned the ambassador program that you implemented. If you could talk a little bit about that as well and what that process of finding ambassadors looks like.
Yeah. So at Remake, you know, we really see ourselves as an advocacy organization whose goal is to turn fashion into a force for good. And we do that through education. And for us, education looks like the short docuseries that we produce called Made in America, or Made In. And we've done Made in America, Made in Sri Lanka, Made in Mexico, Made in Cambodia. So Aisha has taken a team of design students, you know, much like yourselves and people interested in fashion merchandising, to these factories to see the women, to meet the women who are making their clothes, you know, to really help understand that process of, okay, you want to be a designer. Now, when you get your amazing design job, when you're making those like last minute design changes, this is who lives that impacts. You know, when you're thinking about the materials you're using, this is who lives that impacts. So really just like connecting that picture, like you said, showing the interconnectedness of everything, showing that, you know, fashion should be people first. So our films are a big piece of what we do. And then we work really hard to produce high quality, well-researched content. Remake stories are some of my favorite, and I think some of the best out there in terms of learning about the fashion industry. And a lot of them are written by students, are written by ambassadors themselves who are passionate and want to research and write about this industry. And then we'll do different workshops around Wear Your Values or host film screenings. So those types of pieces, all those type of fun events we used to have in a non-sheltering in place time. But we've transitioned a lot to being online lately too. And then the other piece that we do is leadership development. And that comes a lot through our Remake Ambassador Program. And with that, that's a focus on, one, it's either students or, you know, young professionals who have said, all right, I see what's happening in this industry. Like, how do I take my impact to the next level? You know, so one way to do that is sign up to be a Remake Ambassador. And we meet as a collective the first Monday of every month. We just had our first call in October and brought me to tears. We were kind of talking about, you know, the fundraising need that Remake has and how we are we're funded by grassroots efforts. And, you know, we originally started out being corporate funded, but luckily they decided to pull funding away from us because they didn't like how some of the factories were portrayed in the industry. And though that was hard from a like nonprofit operation perspective, it was probably the best move for us ever because it kind of set us free in the sense of like, great, we can be a fully activist organization who is like staying true to who we are, right? You know, the biggest thing you can do is like follow the money to see, you know, if there's greenwashing, to see if there's issues in an industry. And so we work with this collective to train you to be leaders, to train you to be facilitators, to be moderators, to be liaisons, to help you build confidence, right? To me, I think the biggest thing is confidence is that barrier to make it change, believing in yourself that you can do it. So we're this community to help each other, build each other up, because, you know, when we're all set loose, we're gonna change everything together. And usually it's so far it's mostly people coming to our site looking for an opportunity to create change. But I'm really excited, and what I'm working on right now is we're building out an official like student campus ambassador program, and we'll be launching in about 5 campuses in the spring, where we'll be working with them to kind of like educate people on their campuses, hopefully their students from the fashion, merchandising, and design departments, to really like be advocates for Remake and advocates for the garment makers. And then the other piece that we do is transparency. And that's where we have our sustainability criteria, where we evaluate brands and kind of give them our seal of approval or not. That has a lot to do with our pay up fashion campaign that we've been doing. So we really like hold brands accountable in the sense of ensuring that, you know, they're prioritizing maker well-being and sustainability.
Yeah. Can you talk about the pay up initiative that you guys were posting about? Because I think that's really, really amazing.
Yeah. So the Pay Up Fashion campaign, which is kind of a new somewhat movement we've launched recently, really started back in March of this year. Aisha has this like amazing extensive experience working in the fashion industry with corporations, with NGOs, and as you know, stores were closing down, people were stopping to shop, she just saw the writing on the wall of like all of this risk and burden is just going to be pushed down the supply chain onto garment makers. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening is that, you know, an estimated $40 billion worth of finished goods that garment makers had already spent countless hours of sewing and were owed this money, you know, was just paused and retailers refused to pay up. So essentially Aisha was like, all right, we've got to do something about this. And she started organizing. She pulled in from her network people who she knew from visiting factories, from labor rights coalitions, from different individuals or authors, influencers, and just pulled everyone together into this like Thursday morning, 7 a.m. Pacific time call, and was like, let's talk about what needs to happen. Let's get the information. Let's get on the same page. Who's hearing what data is true and accurate. How can we change this? And she's been having those meetings, you know, weekly since March. And eventually that kind of formalized into what was the Pay Up petition, which come full circle, we ended up launching on change.org. And we thought we were going to get around 5,000 signatures, 10,000 signatures. We had no idea, but we ended up getting 270,000 people who signed on to this petition demanding that people pay up. And a lot of time people ask like, well, what does it mean if I actually sign a petition? It means a lot. And I think you probably get this from like wanting to work in social media and marketing, right? It's like when you sign a petition, that's a data point. And when enough of you sign a petition, that's 270,000 data points. And then we can take that and pitch that to the media and get these into big stories and into big publications that can reach even more people. And then that puts pressure on brands. And that, I mean, that's a great thing in a way from an activist perspective, is that the fashion industry has a high reputational risk, right? So media and what people think and say on social media really changes their perspectives. There were heads of sustainability at corporations, heads of companies emailing and calling Aisha and being like, okay, what do we need to do to get us off this list? And she would have a conversation with them and let them know, or we would be sending letters directly out. And so through all that campaigning, we were able to get $22 billion back to garment factories worldwide. Wow. And that's been great. The hard part now though is that we are kind of reaching this point of who's ever left that's not going to pay, it's kind of just not going to pay. Yeah. And their brands that just like don't care, and they have their consumers don't care, is essentially what they've kind of told us. So our next iteration is more of like, okay, well, what does it mean to change the fashion industry as a whole, not just focusing on this one specific ask, which is like paying for orders that were already produced in March, April, and May. And that's why we launched Pay Up Fashion. And you can go to payupfashion.com to see the new petition we have and kind of the 7 demands that we have, which are around, one, definitely paying up. 2, we're demanding for more enforceable contracts. So a lot of things in the fashion industry are built around POs, which I'm sure you're familiar with, like working in the industry, but like a lot of people are not. There's no actual enforceability of contracts that manufacturers sign. It's just kind of like a commitment to make, a commitment to buy. And so it's like, one, how do we change that power imbalance? You know, another is keeping workers safe. So if brands won't commit to really like paying all their garment makers their full wages, what are they actually going to do to protect their health and safety at the very minimum, right? And other pieces are around being transparent and, you know, working on continually to end starvation wages. And then another is, which I think is really interesting too, it's focusing on giving workers center stage. So, you know, so many of our sustainability conversations are organized by brands, funded by brands, but not really bringing in the people who, you know, issues like water scarcity, pollution, health inequities are impacting. And yeah. So you have, so one of the things we're asking is like take Global Fashion Agenda, which is happening now or pretty soon. There are no workers a part of these conversations. And we're like, bring in workers to this conversations. Like they should have a seat at the table. If you're going to make like the Sustainable Apparel Coalition, it's like, we don't need any more brand-led solutions. Bring workers to the table, ask them what they need, and let's let them lead and take their lead. So that's a lot of what we're doing to hold people accountable as well. And then kind of the last one is around passing more laws, right? In California, I don't know if you're familiar with SB 1399, it was a bill that was supposed to improve the garment industry in America, particularly LA's garment industry, and kind of get rid of piece rate. And so that there would be less wage theft overall, and would have just like changed the industry across the board. That bill had support, but never really left California's assembly floor, and just kind of died there. Didn't pass, didn't fail. And so that was really unfortunate, but those are the kind of like legislative changes we need to see. You know, we've been waiting over the past 25 years for these like voluntary brand-led efforts of promises, and there hasn't been really any big instrumental change. So to make that happen, we actually need fashion to be regulated like we already do with agriculture and energy as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so complex. And I think like what that makes me think of is like, I've realized that, I mean, not only is there really no policy around the apparel industry, I don't think people take the industry seriously. Like, I don't think people realize, like, they hear the word fashion and they think of this like niche, frivolous industry. And it can be that, but it's also a massive global industry. It's massive. And it's completely a cog in the wheel of capitalism, because I mean, it's like the industry from my perspective that like drives people to want to consume more.
Yep.
And has been doing so since like the 18th century.
Yep.
So I think like it's just crazy that there's no policy around it. And I think it's like written off as this like niche industry, but it's not. And brands know that, and CEOs know that, but it's wild that there's no policy and no consistent, I don't know, like the words use language, I guess, or no consistent standards or whatnot by which brands have to abide in order to be considered like A, B, or C, like sustainable or transparent, because they're just throwing those words out. But it's like impossible to hold those brands like truly accountable.
Because there's no consistency. There's a gazillion criteria out there. And we ourselves have our own. But I think what's been beneficial is we've made our criteria public. So you can kind of go on to our sustainable brands page. You can click into our sustainability criteria and kind of dig into how we are working with brands, or how we're evaluating brands. And we're excited because the business of fashion is going to use our sustainability criteria to kind of build into how they're going to start looking at brands as well too. Oh,
that's so exciting. That'll be so interesting to see their take on that.
Yep.
I love BOF. What are some of the things I wanted to ask? What are some of the things that you look at when you're evaluating a brand? Because that's so complex.
It is. And we have a transparency manager who particularly looks at every brand and goes through the whole sheet. So a lot of what we do is, one, look at your basic criteria around, you know, the environment, like what kind of materials are you using? And I will say all of this is based on published information, right? So the big key is transparency. What are you actually talking about? Maybe a bunch of brands do some things that they're not talking about, but so that's what we judge on, is transparency first. And then we look at, you know, let's look at the environment. Let's look at the basics. Like, what materials are you using? What kind of like water protections? How are you prioritizing water quality? Overall environmental specifics. And then we look at maker well-being, which for us, when we kind of evaluated the criteria, that was a huge missing piece, which is like, how is the brand prioritizing maker well-being? How is it paying its makers? How is it, you know, supporting their health? What does it look like to protect for safety? What kind of violence are in the factories? Do they publish the factories that they're working with? What kind of work are they doing there? And then we have recently added in elements around diversity and inclusion, and acknowledging that, you know, like, we're looking beyond the supply chain as well too, and at the HQ of brands as well. How are you treating your workers there? You know, like, is your board diverse? Is your executive team diverse? Are you committed to being inclusive as well? It's kind of looking at those pieces.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's, yeah, I mean, it's so complex. Mm-hmm. I've talked about before that it's like this infinite onion of an issue, where even just if you take a supply chain, it's so complex, and you peel back one layer and then there's more and more beneath that. So that's really interesting that you guys are doing that. And I'm interested to see like how those kinds of evaluation processes evolve. And is it hard at all because there's so little information out there and there's not that many brands that really publish data?
Yep. And we have a pretty high bar for passing too. So many of the brands that we run through don't pass our seal of approval. So, you know, if you go on and you see the brands that we've listed here, they have a very high threshold for transparency and have really prioritized sustainability. But I think that's it, is like, there's not a lot of groups talking about what they're doing, or, you know, they've just said that fashion's too complicated. Why bother? Right. So. And we've started to use it too, not just as like an access to promote sustainable, ethical brands, but also kind of as a lever as an organization to use as an advocacy tool. So we think when we're evaluating what brands to run through this, we take, you know, input from our ambassador community, but we also look at, you know, who are the biggest brands out there that have the biggest audiences, and how do they really sit on this scale? And if we, you know, run them through this criteria, can we use that as a lever to influence, you know, how they operate as a business? Or can we use that as a lever to engage with them to improve how they operate and help them create a path forward?
Yeah, I'm looking at your sustainable brand list, and this is really interesting because for the last, it was my capstone, and then I'm expanding upon / changing it. But for the last few months, my boyfriend and I have been building a database that's like this really extensive directory of brands and resources. And a lot of these brands are on there. And yeah, so there's definitely some really amazing companies listed on here that I think more people should know about for sure. And I'll link all of this in the show notes as well. But yeah, it's a phenomenal list.
I think Soko's on here, and they're one of my favorite jewelry brands out there. I actually worked for them while I was getting my MBA, and they're doing some really cool stuff.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's so cool. What can consumers do from an individual perspective? And also what are things that we should look for when we are looking to buy things or looking at brands?
Yeah. So I think the first thing consumers can do is enjoy the clothes you have, right? It's like, why do we need to buy, even if we're buying new or ethical, right? Those still have so many issues. you know, what we've learned about recently, which is happening over in China with the Uyghur Muslim population, is that there's immense, you know, labor, human violations. And a lot of these individuals that have been in concentration camps have been a part of the cotton industry in China, mm-hmm. which has been connected to what has been quote unquote sustainable brands. And so I think that is just a great reminder that, you know, this industry is so flawed. So why not first start with what you already have? How can you mend it? How can you take better care of your clothes to make them last longer? How can you swap those clothing with your friends? So you're kind of like diversifying your wardrobe there and having fun there. So I think that's always the great place to start. Every summer we like to do it's called take the 90 day no new clothes pledge. And one, it's kind of fun in the summer to do. And it's a great entry point for people who are like, wait, I want to take a pause. I want to kind of like get to know my wardrobe again. I know when I first did it, the reason I wanted to do it is because I was turning 30 that summer. And I was like, when I looked at my closet, I was like, oh, this is like Sam of so many years past. But I don't think this is Sam who is going to be like a 30-year-old woman. I still had my like going out in Adams Morgan, like Sam of 24-year-old clothes in there. And so a lot of it was like, I need to get to know who I am. I need to understand the clothes that I have. And then from there, I took that time and educated myself on how to mend, learned about tailors in my area, and really built my wardrobe to be like, all right, this is what I'm going to use. This is how I can sort and kind of find new homes to love the clothes that I no longer want to wear. And then this is more of a tailored down list of the items, you know, I do need to come into, or I do want to come into my new kind of like 30-year-old professional self. So I think it's just like a nice opportunity to think about. It's like, what can I do in 90 days to re-get to know the clothes that I have? And then after that, it's about thinking about, you know, how can you buy pre-loved items, whether that's your local thrift store or I Love The RealReal is one of my favorite places to go, or other kind of like rental resale platforms out there that we're finding, like, again, to no surprise, there's flaws in all of those. And then I think after that, if you get to a point of like, all right, I want to buy new, you can go to sites like, you know, remake.world and check out these sustainable brands and buy for them. And I think even more buying from small local ethical brands, you can really have an impact. Like Tonle is a great example of that.
Tonle is great. And they're fairly affordable too. Mm-hmm. Compared to some other companies, they're definitely like a fairly affordable brand. Do you have any favorite companies or brands that are your go-tos?
Yeah. So The RealReal is one of my favorites, is my go-to. Not a brand, but where I go to often is my sister's closet. And then I really like Boyish Jeans. I think they're so great. And then I love Known Supply and Packed Apparel for kind of your like basics. We actually got our masks from Known Supply. They've had really kind of great cotton masks that we've been wearing around SF. And then I'd say those are probably, and Girlfriend, they're some of my favorite. And then probably if I was actually going to weddings this year, I think Christy Dawn would be my favorite and probably like my splurge for really nice dresses. And then, I don't know, We Are Ha is just like incredible. And I love their like silky fancy pajamas too. They're doing some great stuff.
I haven't heard of that brand, but for anyone who ends up listening, Pact is awesome for like kind of, I feel like it's like a really good entry level brand, like because I mean, and their t-shirts are incredible. Like they're such good quality and super soft. And then Christy Dawn, I just got my first Christy Dawn dress for my birthday from my boyfriend, and it's so pretty, and the packaging, and it comes in like a tote bag. So that's such a great company.
Yeah,
definitely a really good list. Where do you see, this is kind of a broad question, but like from a transparency and sustainability perspective, where do you see the trajectory of the apparel industry headed? Like, do you really think it's going to change? Do you think that that's going to take a long time? Where do you see that going?
I'm a perpetual optimist, so I definitely think the fashion industry is going to change. I also think you can't be in this work without being a forever optimist too. Yeah. I do think the industry is actually going to change now. And I think that's one thing that COVID has done. And I think it's done this in so many industries. It's just put the microscope on all the brokenness that exists, and particularly in fashion, you know, because we are having conversations about the actual business of fashion like we've never had before. And I think that is what's making the difference, is we're talking about POs, we're talking about contracts, we're talking about payments. The conversation isn't just around a garment maker makes $1.75 in a month and they're very abstract and high level. Like, we've been able to tangibly break down what is behind that low wage and dive into the actual supply chain and business of fashion. And I think that helps. And we've also seen consumers become more educated and willing to be a part of those conversations. And I think those are two huge trends that will really change the fashion industry. And I think we have, I'm really excited for what your generation is going to do. And like, particularly this class of graduates and probably the next couple classes after y'all, because you are, you know, being thrown into this mess. You're already passionate about sustainability. You are experiencing the brokenness of the industries that y'all have wanted to work in. And I think you'll be doing your best to change that. And so I feel really optimistic about where industries are going to go, and fashion in particular. There's no going back to the way it was. I just don't see a pathway for that at all. I think change will still be very hard and slow, but I think we're at a much faster clip than we were a year ago.
That's so funny. You live in San Francisco and you still say y'all. I heard it come through.
it holds on strong.
That makes me think, when you're talking about like my generation, how I was like in one of my classes and someone overheard me talking about the apparel industry. And they were like, if it's such a terrible industry, then why are you going into it? Like, why do you still want to go into it? And I remember saying, like, this was like a year ago, maybe more, because I would feel irresponsible not like having this information and not doing anything about it. Mm-hmm. And just stepping away, walking away from this industry, even though it is so heavily flawed, but all industries are. Yeah. And so I think it's really important for my generation to like, and I think we're on the right track, but to definitely take initiative to make that change.
Right. And fashion is so fun. It should be fun and it should be beautiful and it should be art and creative. And it should be something that everyone is enjoying and be a part of. I think that was like the other cool thing that we realized, or a lot of our students realized when we took them on these like made in journeys, is they met garment workers and makers and saw that they were also young women like them who wanted to enjoy their job and wanted to be paid well and, you know, had enjoyed making clothes to a point and like had their skill set that they wanted to flourish in and wanted a job that, you know, saw them as a whole being, right? So it's like so many people want to enjoy fashion. It's more of the like capitalistic piece that really ruins it for it, right? It's like the pressure to buy more, to make more, to deliver more faster, sooner, right? It's like we have Amazon Prime and the next thing you realize is every business is supposed to turn something around in a day. Like that's not reasonable and we shouldn't have to operate at that clip.
I mean, a couple things in response to that is, regarding the young women working in factories and these artisans, I mean, that is, I've talked about this to friends and family so much, is like, at like they want the exact same things that we want, like we are not that different. And like from a global standpoint, at the end of the day, women want to take care of themselves and be independent, or if they're mothers, they want to feed their kids and put a roof over their head and have their kids have access to good education. Like it's we're not that different. And I think once people are exposed to those stories and to the faces of the people who make our clothes, that they will inevitably feel a connection to them. Mm-hmm. And say like, okay, that's who made my clothes. And she's a mom too. And she's a young woman too, who wants to have a job to support herself and be independent and strong-minded, or have her kids have access to a good education. So yeah, I think that's amazing that you guys showed students and designers the people that make their clothes. That's so awesome. And additionally, I was gonna say something, but I don't know what, I completely lost it. But I wanted to ask too, how can people support and connect with Remake?
Yeah, let's see. So the best thing you can do, first of all, is follow us on Instagram. It's probably where we're most active, at Remake Our World, and then signing up for our newsletter so you're abreast of any of our events and what we have going on. The next thing would be to go up to payupfashion.com and sign that petition and be a part of the movement that's reforming fashion to be ethical, inclusive, and sustainable. And then, you know, we're a small nonprofit. I think there's about 10 of us working part-time for Remake, and we depend so much on like volunteer efforts. So if you go to our website and donate to Remake, every little bit really helps. And 80% of those donations go back into the movement building, into the awareness building, into our ambassador program, all the work that we're doing to make fashion a force for good. And 20% is, we're a nonprofit and we have to operationally exist. And turns out too, that people want to sue us all the time. So we have to have some high insurance as well.
What?
Oh my gosh. It's been a wild summer. But so just know that every bit that people donate goes a really long way.
That's good to know. Also, that's crazy. People love to sue.
Especially when you start going after those billionaires.
Oh my gosh. And my closing question is, as an individual and an environmentalist, what gives you hope for the future? It's kind of that I formulated that question based on the kind of eternal optimism notion.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll say it again. I think like you do. I think every one of our Remake ambassadors gives me hope. You know, I launched this program off a good idea, off a feeling I had, off of my own experience of being like, this is exactly the type of organization and program I would have been wanting to be a part of when I was a student at the University of Missouri. And we launched it in 2018. And today we have definitely over 500, if not very close to 700. Caroline, who is our manager of education at Remake, she runs a lot of the day-to-day work now at Remake. And she actually, what's cool is she kind of had a similar journey to you. Is she had been working in fashion, a lot of like marketing, and she had been in the student ambassador program for Victoria's Secrets. We've actually got some of our best volunteers and people who came out of Victoria's Secrets kind of like ambassador program. I think they do just such a good job of like skill sets and organized and professionalism. But then luckily, like her, she was like, this industry seems real messed up. And she had her friend Lindsay, who manages our social media page, who also used to work for Victoria's Secrets, tell her about Remake. And now I've been working with her for a year to grow this program. And I think we've reached definitely over 500 people globally. And it's just so awesome to see these like young men and women raise their hands, decide to step up, you know, acknowledge that they are working to be change leaders in their communities. And many of them have started their own podcast in the last 2 years. They also have built like their own communities. There's one guy, Garrick, he started Eco Stylist, and he's working to like educate men about sustainable fashion and get them on board. Then you have people who've been organizing on their campuses, like Mila from Duke or Brittany from Kennesaw State. They have both been instrumental in raising awareness about pay up fashion. And so
I just think I am so impressed, and that's what gives me hope, because that's kind of like the mass collective that, of awareness that we've been missing. And I think there's just so much energy that's only going to keep growing too.
Thank you again, everyone, for tuning into this episode of Seeking Sustainability. If you enjoyed this episode or any others that you've listened to, then make sure to follow the podcast on whatever platform you're tuning in from. Also, to stay connected, you can follow the podcast Instagram at seekingsustainability_podcast and my personal Instagram at julia.planford. As always, feel free to reach out to me regarding any questions, comments, or episode requests. And of course, share this podcast with anyone who you feel might be interested in learning a bit more about environmentalism and sustainability as well. Thanks, everyone, and I will talk to you guys soon.